May it please the court, my name is Robert Gibbons. I'm here on behalf of the appellant defendant, Bediah Brazelton. The record before this court reveals the two following. First, that on October 10, 2006, Bediah Brazelton was located and arrested by police in Michigan City, Indiana, as the primary suspect in a shooting. Second, it reveals that the second cousin of the victim of that shooting, Joseph Turner, was eventually seated as one of the 12 jurors on the jury that convicted Mr. Brazelton in this case. Now, Mr. Brazelton had a Sixth Amendment right to a trial by jury free of partiality and prejudice. A duty resided in the trial court to ensure that the jury that was seated was, in fact, impartial and free of prejudice.
So why didn't the court satisfy that duty when the judge specifically clarifies, says you're not making a cause challenge on juror number four, or are you? You talked about it. The judge puts this out, and the answer is no, I'm not doing that. And on top of that, for all we know, juror number four never knows that this relative is involved in this whole mess.
Well, to address your first question, Your Honor, the issue that was addressed by the court goes only to actual bias. The question that were asked during voir dire regarding Mr. Turner's ability to be impartial, and then the question that was eventually proposed by the government during the sidebar, both only went to Mr. Turner's ability to act with impartiality. The issue of implied bias or bias stemming from Mr. Turner's connection with the case never arose and was never discussed between either the parties or the court.
But once we get to implied bias, why isn't it highly relevant that the identity of the victim isn't something that comes up at the trial? Why should lots of people, unfortunately, are victims of crime. Some people are even shooting victims. And this is, I take it in your mind, different from a question, have you ever known someone who was a shooting victim? Anyone, you know, your next-door neighbor, a relative, anyone.
Right. The important difference here, Your Honor, is that the juror, Mr. Turner, did hear during the jury selection process Mr. Brazelton's name. He then heard during trial several times references to a shooting that had occurred on the same date.
But does he hear Mr. Bird's name?
He did not hear during the trial that Mr. Bird was the shooting victim.
And that's the relationship we're worried about.
Correct, Your Honor. The concern, though, is that because of the familiar relationship between Mr. Turner and the shooting victim, and because of the relationship between the shooting and the subsequent arrest and trial, the law should therefore impart implied bias on the part of Mr. Turner because of those connections, although Mr. Bird's name did not ever come up during the actual trial.
But, see, you're assuming, I think, that the juror knows that this distant cousin of his has been the victim of a shooting.
Oh.
Otherwise, I mean, I don't see how you can even get started with this argument.
Well,
but juror number four says Bird's a second cousin. He sees him infrequently. You know, there's no indication that he knows anything about this.
From the record, Your Honor, we simply don't know if
right.
Mr. Turner knew that his cousin. What we do know from the record is that he knew his cousin's name. He knew that he lived in Michigan City. He knew his approximate age. And he was a close enough relative to Mr. Bird to realize that he was a relative. And given what we do know from the record, we feel there's sufficient evidence that implied bias should be found as a matter of law, fully independent of the analysis that occurred at the sidebar regarding actual bias.
The other question I have, had the defense sought to eliminate Mr. Turner with a peremptory challenge, I assume your position is that it should have been granted.
If they had, yes, Your Honor.
Right. So I don't quite see the distinction you're drawing between actual and implied if they're both under the peremptory challenge box. And the defense didn't seek to eliminate him through even a peremptory, right?
He did not, Your Honor, but a duty does rest with the trial court, either by motion of the parties through
Trial judge actually proposed further questions, and defense counsel opposed it. Why isn't that a waiver?
Well, Your Honor, the questions that the trial judge asked suggestions for and then were given by the government, those went solely to actual bias. The question that was proposed by the court, or excuse me, by the government, would have only revealed actual bias on the part of Mr. Turner, the question being whether Mr. Turner's relation...
Bias isn't interested in learning about actual bias. The question is, why isn't that a waiver? I mean, it seems utterly bizarre. At trial, the defense says, not only am I perfectly content with this juror, I don't want to learn any more. And then on appeal, he says, well, given the fact that we didn't learn any more, there must have been this implied bias. This sounds like either a waiver or an invited error, and either one is fatal to a defense.
It's our position, Your Honor, that it's neither a waiver nor an invited error. That you need to distinguish between the types of bias. They're wholly independent of one another.
But other cases where implied bias has been there. If this case, if every other word out of someone's mouth had been Mr. Bird's name, then you could almost imagine the fact that Turner sitting there in the jury is creating a structural problem of some kind. But that's not this case at all. I mean, it's beside the point. It's not pertinent. It doesn't come up. There's no reason to think that Mr. Turner is anything but a responsible juror.
Well, again, Your Honor, there is nothing correct in the record regarding Mr. Bird's name having come up.
And what I'm saying is the implied bias cases, if you go all the way back, all involve situations where at the trial these relationships are pertinent to something that's going on.
Well, I would argue that they're extremely pertinent in this case because of the repeated times during the trial when the reference was made either to the defendant having shot someone that morning, where the shooting occurred, that the police responding to the call of shots fired are what eventually led to his arrest. All of that came up during the trial, and all of that is part of the connection between the juror, Joseph Turner.
And that takes us back to my colleague's question about voir dire. It would have been very easy to have asked Mr. Turner, are you aware of anything unusual that happened to your second cousin recently? You could ask it in a way that was open-ended enough that you wouldn't, and you could do it, you know, in a way that didn't taint the rest of the jury pool. You could do all kinds of things.
I entirely agree, Your Honor, and it's our position that not only should counsel for both parties have perhaps proposed those questions, but the trial court itself had a duty sua sponte to propose such questions to ensure that Mr. Brazelton's Sixth Amendment rights were in fact protected, and there's authority for that proposition in several of the cases cited in the brief. Torres from the Second Circuit comes specifically to mind, but if there are any further questions, I'll reserve my time for rebuttal.
Certainly, counsel. Mr. Barrett.
Please, the court. Based on the questions asked of opposing counsel, I think the court has a fairly accurate grasp on what happened at this trial. In an abundance of caution, the government put Mr. Bird's name in its list of potential witnesses on the off chance that he would end up testifying or that his name might come up at trial. That was literally the only time the jury ever heard the name Brandon Bird was during the court's questions as it read out the list of witnesses and asked, does anybody know any of these people? Mr. Turner said, you know, I think he might be a second cousin. I'm not sure. Mr. Bird's name never again arises. At trial, the fact that someone had been shot only arose once. That person was never identified. So it's not even like trial focused on the fact that Mr. Brazelton had actually shot somebody. That only even came up once. And then, as the court points out, the government proposed that more questions be asked of Mr. Turner. The defense objected to those questions and said, we're satisfied. We think the court's done everything it needs to do. So the fact that we're here now arguing about an issue which at trial the defendant specifically disclaimed I think points to the waiver argument, which we make in our briefs, points to invited error. It's difficult to see how this can't be anything but waiver, where the defendant specifically made it the exact opposite argument at trial from what he makes now.
Now, you would agree we need to send this back for resentencing, right?
Yes, on the 100-to-1 ratio grounds. But it's as to the implied bias issue, there's not an issue there. It's not even like, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, does it make a sound? It's more like, what if the person doesn't even know there's a forest there? I mean, Mr. Turner had no idea why Brandon Bird's name was even mentioned that one time during voir dire. It never came up again. So I think the case should be remanded for resentencing on the crack powder disparity issue, but that's the only issue here. So if the court has nothing further, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrett. Anything further, Mr. Givens?
Very quickly, I would first like to just rebut the government's position that this was only something that came up one time. Not only was there testimony by the officers regarding responding to a call of shots fired, testimony regarding the witnesses at the scene identifying Mr. Brazelton as the shooter, and then a bit later on in the trial, there was a government witness who testified that he had been told that Mr. Brazelton confessed to having shot someone prior to the date of his arrest. So those were several times during the trial where evidence was brought up tying Mr. Brazelton to that shooting. My second point, my concluding point here, is just to focus again on the facts that are before the court from the record, that we had a shooting that occurred that morning. That shooting led to the arrest of Mr. Brazelton, and then at his subsequent trial, a relative of that shooting victim was allowed to sit in judgment. Now, under the cases cited in our brief, there's a long history of the law presuming bias in similar situations where there's a familiar connection between a juror and a party or a member that's related to the case. And in this matter, we think that resentencing or a remand for a new trial is proper, and in the alternative, however, that a remand for resentencing, which the government has conceded. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. And Mr. Givens, we appreciate your willingness and that of your law firm to accept the appointment and the assistance you've been to the court as well as your client. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.